W289AU 105.7 FM, Scranton, Pennsylvania. Listen to us throughout Northeast Pennsylvania or check us out on the web at WFTE.org.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
They don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I can drag it into the bathroom and drown in the bathtub.
You bet I cut the taxes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you? Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here this afternoon on the big program. Tony Ladico from the Mon Valley Unemployment Project going to be here talking about the unemployment numbers. And here in Pennsylvania, it appears that those who are long-term unemployed, they're going to get cut off. They're going to get cut off for unemployment benefits, even though Congress did vote to extend it for a couple of months, just in the way the state of Pennsylvania calculates the unemployment. So we'll talk to Tony about that. In the second hour, we're going to talk with somebody from the National Partnership for Women and Families about this Supreme Court case that's going to be heard, I guess, on Monday. Coleman versus Maryland Court of Appeals over the Family Leave Act. This guy got sick. Went to his employer, said, you know what? I need to take some time off under family leave to take care of myself because the doctor has ordered bed rest. Within hours, they fired him, kicked him to the curb, said, hey, too bad, you're on your own, brother. Well, he has filed suit. A lower court sided with the state of Maryland, citing their right to sovereignty. And even though the Supreme Court came out and said, you know what, the family leave applies to everybody. So it'll be interesting to find out what happens there, and also the conversation we have with the folks over at the National Partnership. Also in the second hour, Ted Kirsch, president of AFT Pennsylvania, going to be here talking about education, especially in light of the leaked memo from the Corbett administration touting what wonderful things Corbett and the Republicans have done for education here in the state of Pennsylvania. No mention in the memo about cutting close to $1 billion in education funding. No mention of that. But they did. They saved higher education. Well, that's not what they said. They said they preserved $380 million for higher education for FIA. They didn't talk about the massive cuts that they made, though. So it'll be interesting to talk with Ted Kirsch about that. And in the third hour, Pennsylvania State Representative Mike Sterla going to be here talking about jobs, jobs, jobs. Look, I've said this a million times. November 2010, Republicans ran on the platform of jobs, jobs, jobs. Look around and ask yourself, what does abortion have to do with jobs? What does suppressing voting rights have to do with jobs? Well, suppressing voting rights, well, that would save their job. So I guess that is a jobs bill. It's a Republican jobs bill, one that will make sure that they keep their jobs by not allowing a number of us to get to the polls. I guess it's a jobs bill. What is defunding Planned Parenthood and media? What does all that have to do with jobs? In fact, if you look at what they've done, they've worked their behinds off to destroy jobs. We have lost hundreds of thousands of public sector jobs. Why? Ideology. Is that work being done? Yeah, by the private sector, who's probably charging us a lot more than it would have cost. Anyway, we're going to be taking your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Also, remember, check out our website at thericksmithshow.com. So we've been hearing a lot. This whole election cycle, the whole primary, the Republicans have been talking about, you know, the American dream, and we're going to create good-paying jobs. And I often wonder if they know what a good-paying job is. Minimum wage, flipping burgers, not really a good-paying job. But, you know, that's their mentality. So the question then becomes, what is the American dream? You know, Romney talked about how to get out of the foreclosure crisis. You know, you let the thing bottom out, you let people lose their houses, kick all those people who lost their jobs or are struggling to pay the mortgage or, you know, a whole plethora of reasons, kick them to the curb, let people like him come in, buy up those properties, and rent it back to those people. That's his view. The American dream for him is taking other people's stuff and making money off of it. And I guess if you're at the very top of the scale, that's probably the American dream. If you were born into the investor class, your dream is to someday own a bunch of property and sit by the pool and collect, rent checks and dividend checks or whatever. For the most of us, for the vast majority of us, we're taught you go to school, you get good grades, you get a job, you work hard, and you'll get by. You'll do better than your parents did. I mean, how long have we been hearing this? And for quite some time, it was true. Each generation did that much better than the last. And the next one did better than the last. And the next one did better than that. We're now hitting a time where, and my view is what's happened is, we've given too much control. We've been too business friendly. But what's happened is, our bargaining power, our ability to command higher wages and a better slice of the pie, not all of it, but enough to take a day off every once in a while, enough to maybe a vacation occasionally. What's going on right now is you got people who are working their behinds off just to survive. That, my friends, is not living. That's existing. And I saw this piece in the New York Times that caught my attention, and the headline was, "Harder for Americans to Rise from Lower Rungs." And basically the article points out what I think most of us already know. If you were born into privilege, if you were born into wealth, if you were born with advantage, you stay there. You generally don't fall into poverty. And if you were born into poverty, generally you stay in poverty. And most of the studies that they cited, they said there were five very large studies here in the U.S. That compare nations across the world, and said the U.S. has one of industrialized nations, one of the worst records of people being able to come out of poverty and rise into upper classes. And we like to think of ourselves, we're this classless society. There's no classes here, Rick. No. Yet we talk about the middle class all the time, but we're a classless society. At one time, we had a massive middle class, a very wealthy middle class. Sadly, today, the middle class are the folks who are, as the one woman told me at the gas station a couple of years ago, her rationale for claiming she was not, that she was in the middle class and not in poverty is that she didn't take anything from the government. So I guess that's now the new litmus test for being in the middle class. I don't take anything from the government. Maybe that is the new definition. Maybe that is the new normal. But you look around, there are a lot of folks who are struggling to make ends meet. There are a lot of people who need help with heating assistance or food or rent assistance or anything just to get by. And that has to do with the fact that we haven't had a real jobs plan. And I blame that solely on the Republican Party. Now, the Democrats had a chance. I thought the early stimulus bill that Obama came out with should have been much, much bigger. But since then, since that point, all we've had is obstruction and delay. All we've had is poison pilling. All we've had is obstruction. And I look at this story and I go, you know, it makes perfect sense. If you were born into poverty, you stayed there. If you were born into wealth, you stayed there. And the folks in the middle, kind of fluid. I mean, most people are falling out of the middle quintile, down one, or moving around in there. And I guess that's all right.
But very few getting up to the top or to the top end, and the people who, like I said, in the bottom, that's where they end up staying. Now, you look around the world, and there's a guy who writes over at the Daily and the National Review online. He's calculated that a Danish family can move from the 10th percentile to the 90th percentile with just $45,000 in earnings. That's how close the top and the bottom are. That's how compressed their inequality is. Here in the U.S., if you wanted to go from the bottom quintile to the top quintile, you need $93,000 in additional earnings. That's almost insurmountable. I'm not saying it's impossible, but it is, on a national standard, puts us, on a global standard, puts us in the last place. So we like to think of ourselves as this mobile society, and it's just not becoming true. And what's happened, in my opinion, is that the American dream is something that they throw in our face, but make sure there are plenty of roadblocks so that we don't get there. And I think an interesting quote Robert Reich had today. He said, we're losing public goods available to all, supported by the tax payments of all, and especially the better off, in its place with private goods available to the very rich, supported by the rest of us. And, you know, I read that and I'm going, that's exactly what I've been saying for the longest time. Here in Pennsylvania, they're talking about, hey, well, let's sell off all of our assets. We need to fill those budget gaps. Let's sell off our wine and spirit shops. Let's sell off our turnpike. Let's sell off all of this that is ours for a short-term fix. And then privatizing it and making sure that the investor class does very well out of it. And then again, we foot the bill. And Reich is right. In my mind, we need to start thinking of the public good again. We need to start thinking of how do we make a strong middle working class in this country, a burgeoning middle class. I'm not so much worried about the Wall Street investors. I'm not so much worried about the Bain capitalists. I'm not worried about the Romneys of the world. They are going to be fine. I'm worried about the person who fixed my car. I'm worried about the person whose job is, you know, doing electrical work or building houses. I'm worried about those folks. I'm worried about the 15 million people who are sitting home on unemployment. I'm worried about the people who are going to lose their unemployment here at the end of this month if Congress doesn't act here in the state of Pennsylvania. And I say, well, what do we do to bring that American dream back? How do we get that back? And it comes back to me to jobs. The American dream is to have a good-paying job, the one that you can support your family and put a roof over their head and food on the table and clothes on their back and have security in knowing that, you know what, this job's going to be here and I'm going to be able to retire when I get older with some dignity and respect, and I'm going to have health care, and I'm going to have these things that give us security, which is why we absolutely need a jobs plan, and which is why the Republicans have failed us so miserably with their extremist rhetoric, with their extremist policy, with their ALEC-driven policy. We need a jobs plan. We need to rebuild our infrastructure. We need to make sure that education is available to everyone and that we can all afford it. You know why people stay in poverty? And one of the parts that go into in the story is, you know, you start off in poverty in the U.S., you are not guaranteed to get into college or be able to pay for it here in the U.S. In other countries, it's a lot easier to get that education. And in other countries, you don't have as people as deep into poverty as we have here. Now, these are industrialized countries. I know Rwanda's not gonna argue they'd like to be here, too. But the reality is here, if you start your life off in poverty, you're going to stay there. And you're not going to have the access. That's something that has to be addressed. And I look at all these people who take out, these kids taking out student loans today. I don't know how they're going to pay it. And I'm sure they don't either. Which is why we need to make higher education possible. Yeah, I go back to my friend, graduated from the University of Michigan, undergrad, all the way through to getting her Juris Doctorate. Walked out owing nothing. Nothing. We need health care for all. We need to give people security and that net under their feet so they can go out in the world, put out their own shingle. That's what we need to be working on. We need to strengthen the middle class, not weaken it by going after labor unions like the entire Republican establishment. We need to strengthen the middle class, not destroy it. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about unemployment with Tony Ladico from the Mon Valley Unemployment Project. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. President Obama Wednesday used recess appointments to fill positions on the National Labor Relations Board. Sharon Block, Terrence F. Flynn, and Richard Griffin were appointed to the board. Senate Republicans had blocked confirmation of the president's NLRB board members. The president has the power to appoint his nominees without congressional approval when Congress is in recess. Obama also used recess appointment for Richard Cordray to head the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. AFL-CIO President Rich Trumka commended Obama's recess appointments and said they ensure that crucially important agencies protecting workers and consumers are not shut down by Republican obstructionism. Does the Republican attempt to prevent President Obama's recess appointments really hold water? Jesse Russell reports.
President Barack Obama's recess appointment of Richard Cordray to head the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau could open a whole unexpected can of worms, because Congress might not have been in recess. Republicans have been using a loophole to keep the Senate in pro forma session, thereby preventing Obama from making recess appointments. Every 3 days, a Senate Republican has been traveling to the Capitol and banging the Senate's gavel. Republicans believe that maneuver hypothetically means the Senate isn't in recess. Republican leaders spent most of Wednesday fuming over Obama's move, saying he was usurping the will of the people. Even though the Constitution clearly states that the president, duly elected by the people, has the authority to make such appointments. The move by the president could result in federal courts ruling as to whether or not a pro forma session does indeed disrupt a recess.
A call to action from the Longview, Washington Area Labor Council implores all working class people willing to take the time to come to Longview, Washington for a historic protest in support of ILWU Local 21. A company called EGT is trying to bust unions at the Port of Longview. ILWU Local 21 is fighting back. The Cowlitz, Wakiakum County's Central Labor Council says a grain ship is expected to come in on short notice in late January or early February at the SCAB EGT facility. Every effort will be made to prevent the ship from successfully loading and departing. The call to action says it's time for workers to make a stand to protect a working class standard of living that has benefited from collective bargaining by supporting the ILWU at Longview. The call to action goes on to say that last year's attack on public workers was a warning shot, and Wisconsin was the spark that awoke the sleeping giant of labor. The call to action says there really is strength in numbers, and workers must stand up to stop EGT from busting the ILWU. This newscast was made possible in part through underwriting support from the hardworking men and women of the IBEW, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.
I gotta listen to man.
Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. Question, comment, something on your mind, you can email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. I do answer all emails personally. So you look at this story in the Times, and at the end of it, the reality is we know it's true. We know that if you're born into poverty, getting out of it a lot more difficult than it is if you're born into privilege. Folks stay in there. And this report points out that, look, a big problem going on is income inequality. And with the mass unemployment and with the occupation movement going on, the Occupy movement going on, we are finally discussing that. And I think the Occupy movement has won a major battle in changing the way we talk about things, and that's fantastic. But unemployment comp is one of those things that I think is so important, and the Republicans are Well, they're doing everything they can do to tear this apart. And here at the end of this month, as I understand it, there are going to be 40,000 Pennsylvanians who are going to lose their unemployment insurance benefits if there isn't action. That's why I've asked Tony Lodico, director of the Mon Valley Unemployment Project, to come talk to us. Tony, thanks for taking time for me.
Sure thing. How's it going?
It's good. Well, it's good for me, but 40,000 Pennsylvanians are going to lose their unemployment at the end of this month. Not good for them.
No, not at all. What happened was, as many people know, there was federally an extension for, 2 months of unemployment at the end of the year, part of that last-minute budget showdown where there was, like, the 11th-hour deal. What many people don't know is in Pennsylvania and in six other states, there's a small provision buried in a state law. You see, the last 20 weeks of unemployment comes with an agreement from the state and the Fed. It's not federal money or state money. It's money that comes from the feds, but it's based on state and federal law. Now, in Pennsylvania, as well as our neighbors in New Jersey and Ohio and a few others, and like I said, another three states, with those, we said that the end of actually being able to collect that money was going to be a hard date, as opposed to saying as long as the feds paid for this amount, that it would be, that we would take it and we would continue to allow folks to collect on unemployment. So right now what we're talking about is the people that are the most long-term unemployed,
right,
the people with the least likelihood of getting a job in the near future are the ones that are going to be prematurely dropped off the rolls come the end of the month.
And they're just going to be
the state legislature asks.
And they're just going to be just cut off, and then good luck, you're on your own. Is that the idea?
That's basically the idea. I mean, and it's not just that. It's also the concept that many of these people who have been looking, who have been searching, who can't find anything, believe that they're going to be continuing to receive these extended benefits through at least the end of February, because that's what the national media has told them.
Right.
Nobody has been talking about the fact that because of the way last year the state wrote a law that they're not going to be eligible for the benefits that they believe that they're entitled to come the end of this month, which is going to put a lot of people in a very bad space unless the legislature acts.
So this is part of that unemployment comp bill that we were fighting so vehemently against last summer.
Well, last summer there was the unemployment comp bill with all the changes, and there was a really small provision that very few people would actually remember. It was changing what's called the look back from 2 years to 3 years.
Right.
And it was like one of the things that we were supposedly given that was going to allow people to continue collecting those last weeks of unemployment. That was part of that bill. However, the way that it was written was not ideal. The way it was written, instead of saying as long as the feds continue to give us this money, we will continue to let it get to the people that need it, they said after the new year, there's X amount of weeks that we have to continue giving it to folks, but then they're on their own.
So it wasn't ideal for working people. I'm sure it was ideal for the Republican aim, which is, in my opinion, and you may disagree, is to destroy unemployment benefits, to keep people desperate so that they take pennies on the dollar if that's where the market will bear.
Well, I mean, my job's not to point fingers at, specific administrations,
That's my
job. What I'm doing here is saying what the current unemployment situation is
right.
like. And I'll say this. Who, even if there are people out there who are hoping that people take jobs at pennies on the dollar, those jobs aren't even there.
Rick,
I mean, we're still talking about four people looking for every job out there. So if every person was a classical violinist, Harvard, / rocket scientist who was willing to work a $7 an hour retail job, you would still have 75% of the unemployment problem that you have today. This is a large-scale jobs crisis. The jobs aren't there. It's not just that the good jobs aren't there. The jobs aren't there.
Right. So what's the answer in all this? I've been saying, since November 2010, the Republicans told us they would have a laser-like focus on jobs. I haven't seen a jobs program that's passed. to me, I think we need to go back and say the private sector is not doing it. The public sectors are going to need to step up and be the employer of last resort, because, to be honest, you know, and I understand you can't keep folks on unemployment because their skills deteriorate over time. You need people back to work. We need to go in that direction, I think.
No, I totally agree. I think when the private sector has shown us that they are failing our citizens and they're failing the future of our country, then it's up to our public sector to come in and pick up the slack. And so far, we have not been seeing that in any demonstrable amount since the American Reinvestment and Recovery Act of 2009.
Which, again,
My hope is that people will put aside their differences and really look at what's happening on the ground and do what it takes to get America back to work.
Yep, and restore our manufacturing base and start pursuing trade policies that benefit us. Pipe dream, I think, on those veins. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show here with Tony Ladico. He's the director of the Mon Valley Unemployment Project. Tony, what can we do here in the state? What can we do right now to help these folks in the short term? Because as I understand, January 28th is the end of it. 40,000 people kick basically off the rolls. What are you saying people should be doing to help them right now?
Well, I'd say you can do two things. One is you can call your local representative and let them know that this is important to you. And not only do you want to see this bill, not that you just want to see them actually step up and try to make a bill to fix this, but you want to see a clean bill. Because what we saw last year is we saw a lot of horse trading, we saw a lot of politics as usual, instead of somebody just coming in and saying, here's a very specific problem, let's do a very specific fix, let's not put in all these riders and all this other stuff to it. This is not going to cost the state of Pennsylvania one red cent to do this, okay?
Right.
So why should we do anything less than let Pennsylvanians get the benefits to which they are entitled and the benefits to which they could receive if a small change in the technical wording of the law is passed?
What are the chances
of that happening? Other thing that could be done, I'd say, is to call Senator Gordner's office directly, because Senator Gordner, is the person who's more influential than anybody else in this situation.
Right. What are the chances of that happening? Because this was, if I remember, when I remember this bill, this was one of those things that the Republicans fought really hard for, and I don't know that they're willing to give much up. What are the thoughts of something getting done?
Putting partisanship aside, I'd say that what we saw last year with Occupy was amazing, like you said, in the way that the way that Occupy has changed the dialogue.
Right.
I mean, people were asking me up till like October if I thought there was any chance of there being any other federal extensions being passed. And my answer was I wouldn't put any money on it at all.
Right.
And we got a 2-month extension. And now we're looking at, and we're thinking that there's probably a pretty good chance that federally they're going to do another extension. So, I mean, with that, all bets are off, But this is something that really hasn't had a lot of exposure, and the time frame is very short,
Right. Because I look at this, and one of the things
anything's possible.
Right. One of the things that bothers me, once you pull this money out of the economy, really that's what you're doing. You're pulling money out of the economy. My fear is that you start to see the economy to slow even more and causes more unemployment. So the more people that we kick off the rolls, the more unemployment we're going to cause by those folks not being able to, put food on the table or, pay their rent or their light bill or anything else.
Oh, well, it's shown time and time again that one of the best forms of economic stimulus is extension of unemployment benefits, because that money gets injected immediately back into the economy. People that get unemployment checks aren't sitting on them. They're spending them. They're spending them at their corner stores. They're spending them at the small businesses.
Yeah, but if you listen to
spending that money, and it goes right back into the economy for stuff that people need.
Yeah, but if you listen to the right-wing media, they've painted it as people going on vacation, saving their money and going to Hawaii, and you hear all of these fantasy stories out there. And the question I've got for you, and the folks that you work with at the Mon Valley Unemployment Project, how many people are living the high life there? How many people are how many people are thrilled that they're unemployed?
We don't really talk. There might be those people that exist, but I haven't really been talking to them, I'll be honest with you. The average benefits, are in the low to mid $300 a week. That's not a king's ransom, That's less than I make a month. That's less than most most people out there make in any given month. On average, you're talking about half of what that person was making when they were working. You know, with that kind of stuff, nobody is living high off the hog. This is money that's just used to help people get by because they can't find a job. And like I said before, anybody who says these people are just avoiding work, show me the jobs.
Yep.
Really, show me the jobs. If you can, you can point to a help wanted sign here or a help wanted sign there, but show me any credible study that shows that there are enough jobs for the number of people out of work. It's not there.
It's interesting
that the jobs aren't here. And until they are, people should be able to keep their lives together. They shouldn't have to lose their house. Their family shouldn't break up. They shouldn't lose everything that they fought their entire lives for because of an economic forces larger than them.
Excellent point. So lastly, we want to be calling Gordner's office. We want to be calling our state rep. I'd say in this area, make sure you call our friend over there in the 88th district and let him know, Scott Perry, and let the reps know.
I'd say in particular, let your senators know. The Senate seems to be the group that has moved most legislation around unemployment through, you know, along with Gordner. They seem to be the ones that are moving the stuff. So in particular, and you can call your House person, but if you call your state senator, I think, the message will be there a little bit louder.
Alrighty.
As well.
Tony Ludico, I appreciate the time.
Thank you.
Director of the Mon Valley Unemployment Project. Quick break right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show. Where working people come to talk.
In an ocean of red, Rick Smith.
At last, a new year cometh. I say at last because, politically, 2011 was a rough ride. Let me just mention a few of the bigger bumps. Non-stop congressional gridlock. Donnie Trump. The working class depression. Obama's serial surrenders to raw Republican partisanship. Newt Gingrich. The reemergence of Wall Street's Gordon Gekko arrogance. Right-wing governors gone wild. Rick Oops Perry. More tax breaks for corporations. Newt Gingrich again. And at year's end, both Sarah Palin and the Donald suggested that they might run for president, which could set up a titanic clash of big hairdos. Yet, we should not despair about the many political downsides of the old year, for they prompted a series of very promising uprisings at America's grassroots. Progressives in states like Wisconsin, Ohio, Montana, Colorado, and Mississippi, yes, Mississippi, scored big gains, and the Occupy Wall Street eruption all across the country has lifted spirits, revitalized grassroots organizing, and put some real move in the movement as we head into 2012. In January, for example, a strong and savvy coalition will mobilize a nationwide campaign for repealing corporate personhood and the Supreme Court's infamous Citizens United edict. Also, the rise of the non-corporate economy is booming, with millions of Americans turning to co-ops, credit unions, farmers markets, fair trade shops, and other local enterprises that ordinary people control, not absentee profiteers. Plus, strong, genuinely populist candidates for the U.S. Senate and House are running next year, including Elizabeth Warren in Massachusetts, Tammy Baldwin in Wisconsin, Norman Solomon in California, Ilya Shaiman in Illinois, and Eric Griego in New Mexico. This is Jim Hightower saying, we have important work to do, so don't moan about 2011. Organize for 2012.
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, HightowerLowdown.org.
Seems like things are kind of upside down. Choke a few someone to turn around her.
Get on board the Herman Cain train. You know, I missed Herman. I missed Cheesy Dwarf. I missed him when he went away. I was hoping he was going to be in New Hampshire next week when we were there to cover the primary. But, you know, he went away, and I go, well, maybe he's going to go away for a bit. I had to do a little reconciling with the missus after it turns out that, you know, allegedly he is a, you know, a serial skirt chaser. And, you know, hey, you know, I guess that's what he's into. God bless him. But he's back. The Herman Cain train is back. He is on a bus tour. In fact, it's called the Cain Solution Revolution. And he's going to get out there and he's going to talk about his 999 plan. Wants to keep it alive. Wants to keep it going. You know, the 9% corporate tax, 9% personal income tax, 9% national sales tax. The corporate tax kind of optional. Because he's got a little plan in there where he can pay zero. So it's really a 099. Personal income tax on you and me, sales tax on you and me. This doesn't sound like such a great idea. But he's going to get out there and he's going to make sure the Republicans, they come along. In fact, he has a website. You might want to check it out. CainSolutions.com. And it may come to, he may bring his bus and his cheesy, pizza along with him. And look, I'm all in favor of having Cheesy Dwarf out there running around talking about taxes. Because the more we talk about it, the more we talk about these schemes, the more I think the American people are going to wake up to realize every time we start monkeying with stuff, you and I get the short end of the stick. Every time we pull straws, we lose. I'm in favor of going back to a rational, sane, progressive tax. Sorry, the more you make, the more that's expected of you, the more you're going to have to pay. Because you use more of the infrastructure, you use more of the education system. It's only rational. But you hear the Republicans talk, man. Those 40-50% of the people who don't pay any taxes. Never mind the corporations that don't pay any taxes. In fact, I'm still trying to find out what Pepco Holding does. And does so well that we pay them almost 58 cents on every dollar of profit that they earn. They don't pay taxes to us. We pay them. So they make a dollar in profit, we give them 58 cents extra. Just for the privilege of having them here. So wonderful. And I wonder how much money the Cain train is going to be getting out of the Koch brothers. Because if you remember, you know, Herman was, he was a brother from another mother, if you remember. But the Kochs and all the social conservatives and all of these way out white right-wing groups, evidently they're going to have a big powwow down in Texas next weekend. Because they need to find a consensus for a Republican presidential candidate. Because all of the social people are, you know, the people who really think that abortion is the main issue, who think that, you know, prayer in school the main issue, who think that In God We Trust plastered all over our money, that's the main issue. Yeah, never mind you don't have any money. Don't worry about that. Don't worry about we're going to cancel your unemployment. Don't worry we're going to kick you to the curb. Just make sure that it's written on the coin. So they're going to have this big powwow at the ranch of a couple extremely wealthy folks to talk about who they're going to go after. And what I love about it is it's this whole movement by the Republican Party to try and push an insane agenda, but also coerce their segment to vote for their person and then whoever. I love what Virginia did. In order to participate in their primary, you had to sign a pledge, and you got to love the pledges, that whoever the inevitable Republican candidate is, that's who you will have to vote for, or you can't participate in the primary. And you kind of really love that. But understand, you know, the social conservatives, these people who are worried about abortion, gay marriage, that stuff, that's their primary focus. They're worried. They're worried that, you know, Rick Santorum may not be the guy who's going to be able to make it all the way. And you look at his ground game, you look at his campaign, and you've got to question his ability to run a national campaign. But they're worried that it's being split up. And that's why I think Bachman was quick to get out. I thought she would stay until at least South Carolina. The money people are going, well, we need to get behind somebody to push it past Romney. Because Romney doesn't seem to be able to break the 25%, the 30% number. He seems to be stuck right there. So the Republicans seem to be nicely split up. And I got to tell you, I love seeing them fight each other. And I'm hoping that Gingrich and Rick Santorum, come together and gang up on Perry. I think that would be quite interesting. But understand, these social conservatives, they want to get rid of Romney. He's the guy who they're focusing on, because they don't think he's going to be the kind of social conservative they want him to be. He's saying all the right things. He's singing the right tune. He's talking the right talking points. But at the end, you gotta know he's really not quite the guy that he's trying to lay out for you. He's really not the guy who's going to forge their agenda. Now look at Corbett here. Corbett's not going to go out in front on the radical stuff, and his leaked memo kind of says that. He looked around the country at the governors who got themselves into trouble, and he said, look where they got themselves into trouble, going after labor rights, going after women's rights. He's not pursuing that radical agenda. Now, he said from the beginning, if it gets to his desk, he'll sign it, but he's not pursuing it. And I think that's what the social conservatives fear in Romney. That, if it comes to his desk, he'll have to deal with it, but he'll do everything in his power to make sure it doesn't. So that he'll be protected by a divided House and Senate. I think that's what they're afraid of. And if they get someone like Santorum, who will go out there and advocate for it, that would make them so much happier. And, we keep seeing all this radical stuff, this extreme stuff popping up. And, it's hysterical because the Republicans, they're trying to tell you that they're not extremists and they do all of these extreme things. And I look at New Hampshire, where we're going to be next week, and House Bill 1580, this piece of legislation that a couple of these freshman representatives sat down. They were having lunch one day, and they were, what can we do to really, really show how insane we are, I guess. And these three guys came up with an idea to mandate that any piece of legislation passed in New Hampshire has to find its origin not in the Constitution, but in the Magna Carta. And you go, well, what? And, I sat and I thought about it. You're going back and you think history class years and years ago, Magna Carta, feudal times. You had the king who arbitrarily was punishing people and throwing people into prison. And you had this environment of insanity. And the Magna Carta gave you the right of habeas corpus. And I started thinking about this. Where were these three when Bush took it away? But there's a lot in the Magna Carta that makes you go, how do you square that? How do you square when it says in the Magna Carta, we shall straightaway return the sons of Llewellyn and all the Welsh hostages. We shall act towards Alexander, king of the Scots, regarding the restoration of his sisters. I don't know how you put that into law. Not quite sure. And I love what the guy who's the New Hampshire Democratic Party spokesman, what he had to say. He said, I appreciate all the hard work the Republican legislators are putting into the effort to make them look like extremists. He said, it saves us the trouble. And he's right. And, they went into this interview with these guys, and they even admitted, we may have to bone up on what the Magna Carta actually said. But here again, part of me thinks it was just, hey, let's do something to grab some attention, and hey, look at me. Now, they all admit, the Magna Carta doesn't have anything in it that would weigh in on issues of today. Which is kind of surprising to me that they didn't say, well, if it's not in the Magna Carta, we can't talk about gay marriage or women's rights or abortion, because it wasn't in the Magna Carta. And that's where I thought they were going with it. And they still may, for all I know. But I find it quite humorous that that's what they've chosen, and that's the direction they want to go. And what it shows to me is, all this talk about, we care about the Constitution. Not so much. Because, understand, that may have been the basis of the idea of what liberty at that time period was. But understand, we are now almost 800 years removed. And some of the things that are in it, I absolutely agree with. The idea of being able to question the person that's holding me, why they're holding me, make them tell me why I'm being held captive, I firmly believe in. And if they really wanted to do something, if they really wanted to be true conservative, true Christian, true all of those things that they say, constitutionalists or Magna Cartaists, if you will, they would mandate a restore of habeas corpus for every American citizen, not just the ones we give fancy titles to. Let's take a quick break right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425.
Making the blue blood see red. The Rick Smith Show.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for the Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at thericksmithshow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can and we will rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
Earth, sky. Thursday, January 5th. If you're in the Northern Hemisphere, the latest sunrises of the year might be happening for you around now.
The exact date of latest sunrise varies with latitude, but they're happening now for latitudes like those across the central United States. Likewise, comparable latitudes in the Southern Hemisphere are seeing the latest sunsets of the year around now. That might surprise you, because the shortest or longest day of the year always comes on a solstice, and the most recent solstice was in December.
But it's a seasonal phenomenon that the latest sunrises and sunsets don't coincide with the shortest or longest day. The main reason is that our Earth doesn't stand exactly upright with respect to its orbit around the sun. A secondary reason is that the Earth's orbit isn't a perfect circle.
Earth is always traveling fastest in orbit when we're nearest the sun every January. We're always traveling slowest in orbit when we're farthest from the sun in July. Clock time gets a bit out of sync with sun time by about half a minute a day for several weeks around the December solstice.
The result is latest and earliest sunrises and sunsets that are out of sync with the solstices. It sounds complicated, but many people notice it. I'm Jorge Salazar.
And I'm Deborah Bird. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
The man who sends the investor class diving for their tax shelters. Rick Smith.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. So today, in labor history, 1914, Ford Motor Company raised its wages from $2.40 for a 9-hour day to $5 a day for an 8-hour day. And the whole idea was to keep unions out. You know, there's this meme going out around there saying, well, he did it because, you know, he cared about his employees and he wanted them to be able to buy his automobiles. And while some of that may have been true, the reality of it was, hey, look, I'm giving you this. You don't need those, and I don't want to have to deal with those unions. Well, eventually they unionized, and they, for a couple of generations, provided fantastic wages for their workers and living conditions and then the whole nine yards. And now we're seeing the story today, the automakers have racked up strong gains in 2011. And again, you know, I go back to the time when the Republicans were just incensed that Obama, how dare Obama give the auto industry a little help to stay on their feet? Never mind the fact that we've been giving bailouts and handouts to the foreign car companies for a generation to try and get them a foothold here. Never mind that. But we're going to save these jobs. And for me, it wasn't about bailing the companies out. It was about saving those jobs. It was about saving those communities. And now we're seeing it's reaping benefits. And I had done a TV show, you know, some time ago where the guy said, well, you know, what do you, you know, it's a short-term thing. I'm going, no, these are helping communities thrive. Now understand, you know, the economy tanks. Next year, this year, because of all the obstruction, we could be right back where we started from. But I said then, it was smart policy, it was smart investment. And we need more of that. We need more smart investment, more sound policy to help create jobs. And you look at Romney running around saying, well, you know, when I was at Bain Capital, we helped create hundreds of thousands of jobs. And nobody really raised their hand and say, where did you create those? Not until one of the groups tried to run an ad, and someone said, you have to prove that. And they couldn't. And now the Romney camp is coming out and saying, well, you know, here's how we came up with that number. And it's real fuzzy math. I mean, it's really nice cherry picking. They took Staples, they took Sports Authority, and they took Domino's. Those are their big job creators. They're claiming 89,000 jobs at Staples. They're claiming 15,000 jobs at Sports Authority and almost 8,000 at Domino's Pizza. And they're saying these are the great jobs. These are the jobs we're creating. And nobody bothered to say, well, what about the people at, you know, American Pad and Paper Company who are making good, solid, decent, middle class wages? What about the people at the Dade International who are making good, solid? We're actually producing something. We're actually making a product for sale, not stores and pizza, but actually producing goods. But he goes in, they go and they say, well, that's how we got the number. Never mind those, you know, those hundreds of thousands of jobs that we kicked to the curb before. These are the ones we want you to focus on. Here, over here, here's the shiny thing. And I'm hoping, you know, as we go down the road, I'm hoping that we see more folks speaking out saying, look, you know, during the 80s and 90s, Bain Capital came in, took over our company, and did exactly what every corporate raider during that time period did to them. Downsized them, stole their pension, cut them off, saddled them with massive debt, and then cut them off to bankruptcy. Because that's the way he got wealthy. That's the way a lot of those people did. They sucked all the asset out. They heavily leveraged these companies. And then, oh, gee, we're bankrupt. And then you, the taxpayer, end up holding the bag. You know, I was having a conversation with my producer this afternoon. And we paid, my wife and I paid off our house. We decided that, you know what, one of the things we want to make sure we do is we have a place for our children, a place to live, no matter what happens. So we went and, you know, we paid off the house. We have no mortgage. And we were saying that, you know, rich people don't think that way. They leverage the house to buy more things. Because they can invest it and make more and more and more. And, you know, that's the difference between the 1% and the rest of us. I want that security of having my mortgage paid for. And I think most people may think the way I do. But when you get up into that strata, when you get up into that 1% where they're going, well, you know, I can take this $200,000 and I can leverage my house and I can go buy that house and make that guy pay me rent. And then I'll leverage that and I'll buy that and I'll leverage that. And then what happens? Well, like all Ponzi schemes, because basically that's what you're talking about. You're taking money from one place, you're moving it to another and hoping someone's going to pay you so you can keep going. That's basically it. So when it all comes crumbling down, who ends up holding the bag? Well, the taxpayer, because we have bankruptcy laws. You know, that guy's not going to lose his house. They're going to protect him. He's going to be able to, he'll be okay. It's the taxpayers who get screwed. And during the 80s and 90s, it was the working people who got screwed. And I'm sure most people in the audience, if you were working during that time period, you know exactly what I'm talking about. There were good, solid companies who were there for generations, who provided a reasonable profit, but provided good, solid, stable jobs, a good anchor in the community. And they went away. And they went away quickly. And what's angering on so many levels is that you've got Romney now saying, I've created all these jobs. And the media in this country is going, okay, I like Staples. Never mind the fact that Staples hired most of the people after Romney left. Never mind that once they got rid of him, those companies then grew. Never mind that. The fact that they've grown now, I guess. And if you look at his one partner who said, yeah, I got to be honest with you, I never thought we were creating jobs. I thought we were filling my pockets. I thought we were lining my pockets with more money. That's what the capitalist mentality is. They don't care about society. They don't care about the working class. They don't care about the health of the overall economy. They care about themselves. And that's the rules that we've set up. That's the rule of the game that we have put into place. We've encouraged it, actually, by allowing them to be able to file bankruptcy. I mean, look at Donald Trump. Would Donald Trump be Donald Trump without the bankruptcy laws that we have? How many millions of dollars did we write off? How much money did we forgive so that Donald could be a billionaire? How many? And you know why we did it? Because he was smart enough to play the game. And that's capital that most of us don't have. That's intellectual capital that most of us don't understand. He was born into that. And I go back to what I talked about at the beginning of the program, about if you're born into that upper strata, if you're born with that privilege, that intellectual, that human capital, that mind capital, it's hard for you to fall out of that area. If you're born into privilege where you're going to go to the best schools and you're going to get a college education and you're going to get that first job, and not some intern job where you're going to have to work for free for a couple of years. No, you got that first job right away. You're going to, of course, do much better than every other working stiff in this country. And, of course, you're going to have a skewed view. I'm sorry, Romney, I don't see him as a working class hero. I don't see him out there. And he doesn't even try and fake it. Bush used to at least try and go out and clear brush every once in a while, pick up a shovel so that maybe he'd get a callus every now and again. So go, look what I got. And he'd show it to all his friends. Romney doesn't even try that. So I find it amazing. And I'm hoping over the next several weeks and months, as this election season goes on, that we're going to be able to talk to people who have had that happen to them. Because it's a history that we need to relive. It's something that we need to understand because he's going to pursue those same policies. Because to him, the go-go 80s and 90s were great. Gordon Gekko should be his running mate. In fact, I know there's a campaign out there right now of people saying Romney Gekko. You know, greed is good. And to them, it is. But who did it come from? You know, I listened to Rick Santorum's speech, and he's talking about his grandfather, 72 years old, working in the coal mines. Is that the nation we want, a 72-year-old working in the coal mines because he has to? Really? According to Rick, I guess so. On so many levels, I see the Republican Party and the policies that they've been talking about, that they've been advocating, as horrible failures. Absolute horrible failures. And you look at what's going on in New Hampshire. Today, the House voted 212 to 128 to send this anti-worker bill to the Senate, basically ending unionization rights for state workers in the state of New Hampshire. How is that creating jobs? How is taking someone's right to fight for a better tomorrow, how is that going to make this state, this country better? I'm not seeing it. I wish I did. But I'm hoping and I'm feeling it out there. I'm feeling people frustrated, angry, and ready to stand up and say, you know what, we need to come together. We need to join together and fight back. We need somebody, and I'm hoping we can push Obama in the right direction, and we can put people into Congress who are going to push for the right policies and go after making this country really, truly, honestly, of, for, and by we the people. Where everyone has a shot. Everyone has the opportunity to get a good education. Everyone has a shot at a decent retirement. And everyone has a shot at life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with New Hampshire AFL-CIO President Mark McKenzie. Stick around. Right back after this.
I ain't never been on welfare. That's one place I won't be. I'll be working as long as my two hands are fit to use. I'll drink my beer in a tavern, sing a little bit of these working men.
Proudly blue in an ocean of red, Rick Smith.
This is WFTE 90.3 FM Mount Cobb and W289 AU 105.7 FM Scranton, Pennsylvania. Listen to us throughout Northeast Pennsylvania or check us out on the web at WFTE.org.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. President Obama Wednesday used recess appointments to fill positions on the National Labor Relations Board. Sharon Block, Terrence F. Flynn, and Richard Griffin were appointed to the board. Senate Republicans had blocked confirmation of the president's NLRB board members. The president has the power to appoint his nominees without congressional approval when Congress is in recess. Obama also used recess appointment for Richard Cordray to head the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. AFL-CIO President Rich Trumka commended Obama's recess appointments and said they ensure that crucially important agencies protecting workers and consumers are not shut down by Republican obstruction.
She is with a little button. She's our little angel. That's Isabella Maria. Isabella Maria, we don't take her out in crowds. She has a disability. She has a disability that has a, according to the records, the statistics, has a 1% chance of survival after 1 year.
With the best medical care that money can buy. They can see other people have, other babies have this rare medical condition, and they don't have it, and they don't survive.
She is 3.5 years old.
With the best medical care money can buy.
Get her out! Put her to work! Gonna flog her some! Ah, my God, my political ego is too big not to!
So Bella is here with us in spirit and is deeply embedded into my heart. People ask me what motivates me. I say the dignity of every human life.
Except the ones that want to be dependent on government via Medicare and Medicaid and food stamps and, oh, they don't have, no, they don't have any dignity.
God has given us this great country to allow His people, to be free. Has given us that dignity because we are a creation of His. And we need to honor that creation. And whether it's the sanctity of life in the womb or the dignity of every working person in America to fulfill their potential, you will have a friend in Rick Santorum. We are off to New Hampshire.
On the other hand, if you want Granny to actually eat in her old age, if you hope to live to an old age, you don't have a friend in Rick Santorum, and you can go piss up a rope.
Because the message I shared with you tonight is not an Iowa message or an Iowa and South Carolina message. It is a message that will resonate across this land. It will resonate, I know, in New Hampshire, because you think I've been in Iowa a lot. I've been to New Hampshire 30 times and have been more times and done more events than anybody but John Huntsman, and he cheats, he lives there. We will be in New Hampshire. We'll leave tomorrow. We'll spend our time there. And with your help and God's grace, we'll have another fun night a week from now. God bless you.
We will not quit until we have effed this entire country six ways from Sunday and dare you to say a damn thing about it. By the way, David in Tennessee noting that Santorum income that provides that health care, the best that money can buy, that has kept that poor little girl alive at least 2 years longer than medical science said she would be. Yeah, David in Tennessee noting most of that money comes from his Senate pension, the one that almost equals his straight salary and kicks in after one term. Yeah. Wow. If there was some way to build that Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure time machine and drag Socrates, Plato, Aristotle into the future and show them that speech, no, screw that. Let's bring Sophocles. And let him watch that speech. He's going to look at you. He's going to look at you and say, that guy's got it coming. Man, he's got it coming. There is hubris there aplenty, and I wouldn't want to be around when the gods get ready to deal with him. That's what Sophocles would say. And Sophocles knew him some hubris. So I've taken up the first half of the program with a great big giant honking filibobster. And we've got several phone lines lit up. I hope you have stuck around for this. But we'll be back with your calls. There's another story that has to make it into the mix somewhere tonight, because it also has all in the world to do with the current hysteria, and I think it rises at this point to the level of hysteria over what kind of rights we as citizens can expect to have in the freedom of this blossoming fascist little empire in which we live. A note coming in. A contribution. This donation is from a group of women who are dedicated and who stand for peace every single day. Somewhere. And I and all of us here at the Horn, we honor that, and we reverence that. And thank you. So a break, and then we come back, because this is, after all, conversation radio. This is The Horn.
Busted flat in Baton Rouge, waiting for a train, and I was feeling near as faded as my jeans. Bobby thumbed a diesel down just before it rained and rode us all the way into New Orleans. I pulled my harpoon out of my dirty red bandana. I was playing soft while Bobby sang the blues. Nothing left to lose. Nothing. I mean, nothing, honey, if it ain't free.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention
$24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
pig lickings make me absolutely vomitously sick when they start prattling on about freedom the way that Bro-Fro-Mix, Frothy Mixture Santorum did. And hence, the return to the program with a magnificent stirring, I'd get tears in my eyes every time I hear it, song, Freedom's Child. Freedom's Child by Billy Joe Shaver. Whew. Powerful, powerful medicine. You wonder if the likes of Rick Santorum would even understand that song if it was played to him, oh, I don't know, at about the same decibel level that the Barney theme was played for those people that he enjoyed having tortured in Guantanamo Bay. You wonder? Because I wonder. Ray writing in, Raid! Santorum's just getting his few seconds in the sun. Exposed to the light, the cockroaches scatter. Jan writing, Bob, your choice of music is superb. Jerry and Jan are rocking and smiling in Vegas. Jerry has played this song several times over the past couple of weeks. Thanks, Bob. Never stop. Big smile. And, in fact, just a fascinating little story. That's, of course, Me and Bobby McGee was written by Chris Christopherson. And David in Tennessee telling me that a few years ago, 6 or 7 years ago, maybe it was like a Farm Aid or some such, big old benefit concert. Toby Keith is coming off the stage, and Chris Christopherson's headed on stage when Toby looks over and says, Hey, you're not going to do any of that hippie liberal shit, are you? David writes, As Chris had his guitar in baseball swing position, he was restrained by two stagehands. That Vietnam chopper pilot vet gave Toby Keith the ass-chewing of his stinking life. I like knowing things like that. Truly I do. Maybe Rick Santorum can adopt that we're going to put our boot in somebody's butt song for his campaign anthem instead of trying to rip off some usually progressive artist. God. Was it Bro-Fro-Mix who initially made his campaign slogan, Let America Be America Again? Was that him, or was it some other disgusting right-winger? I can't remember anymore. They all run together. Let's see if anybody's still on the phone. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Well, hey, Tracy, what's up?
Not a whole hell of a lot. I've just been listening to you about our buddy Rick, and I'm... I had to laugh. I was sitting in my taxi laughing the whole way in L.A. traffic because I just cannot believe some of this stuff, you know, he says. And I'm shocked and amazed and frightened. And he's a sick bastard, isn't he?
Yeah, really. And shame on the for-profit 1% media, Tracy, for treating him as if he is a legitimate... As if he's a legitimate participant in this country's political dialogue.
That's what bothers me. You know, it's like, really? This man is... I can't even, you know, because I tend to not watch the news anymore because it makes my head hurt.
Understood.
And, you know, the highlight of my day, though, was hearing that Michelle Bachmann and more than likely Rick Perry have dropped out of the... presidential race, even though it makes for good comedy.
Well, careful about feeling too good about that, Tracy, because that means that all of those weird, knuckle-walking, mouth-breathing, fundamentalist evangelicals will go a-flockin', even though they are heretics who should probably be burned for their impiety, they will go a-flockin' to Rick Santorum, which will make him more powerful and more dangerous.
He is just, you know, when he's talking about his buddy G. I mean, okay, I'm a Christian.
Okay, yeah, let's go there. Let's go there. And I say this with all respect because we've talked a lot and we know each other. Would you ever dare describe Almighty God as your pal?
No. You know, there is a song, What a Friend We Have in Jesus. You know, all our sins and griefs to bear. And, you know, as the song goes on. But basically, from what I'm understanding about my relationship with Christ, that's between me and him.
You mean you wouldn't stand behind a podium somewhere in Iowa and ballyhoo it all over the place?
No, basically, now, I would say as far as, like, I am grateful to God for the things he has done for me, but God has no respect to persons. You know, he doesn't do more for one than he does for the other.
And see, that's the kind of weirdness that's inside this Santorum speech, because what he was talking about is really old school Calvinist, God likes me better, therefore he has done great things for me. And yet, Calvin is this big old stinking heretic inside Rick Santorum's bizarre little niche of Roman Catholicism, because every Protestant is a heretic.
It's frightening, and like I said, because like you were mentioning about, you know, when you pray in the closet. You know, I'm not a, you know, not a Pharisee. When I, on those occasions that I do pray, I'm in my home. You know, and when I do go to church, I do pray, but I'm not praying out loud. You know what I'm saying? I'm not speaking in tongues, and no disrespect to anybody that speaks in tongues, because I can see the emails coming now.
No, I don't have a lot of tongue speakers out there in the audience.
Okay, good. Okay, but my thing is, it's like, come on. You're saying that God likes you better than he likes anybody else.
Yeah, God, you know, for instance, God likes Rick Santorum better, therefore his sick little baby daughter has lived 2 years longer than some other person's little baby daughter with the same genetic illness.
Exactly. And let's face it, it's because why? He has health care.
Damn Skippy!
He has a pension paid for by who? Last time I checked...
Yeah, he's doing some of that government dependency he says he hates. But then again, he hates abortion unless he and his wife are doing it, too, so it's par for the course, isn't it?
You know, that government dependency that pays for his pension, that pays for his health care for him and his family, that dependency, I'm like, the last time I checked, we didn't elect that asshole into office, but the people who did, basically those are his bosses. How is it the people that we've elected into government that we are supposedly, you know, for the people, by the people, other people, and whatnot and so forth, do they get health care that I'm paying for and I can't get any? I've never understood that.
There's no sense in trying, Tracy, because it is the very essence of cognitive dissonance. You can't make sense out of it because it doesn't make sense.
And the fools, like you said, I don't like to call people stupid. I don't like to call people stupid, but I have to, because how stupid are you that you are constantly voting these people in that, you know, we pay for their health care, we pay for their pension, we pay for their protection, you know, but if we dare ask for health care, we're socialists?
And dependent on government. No, we're not socialists. He made that clear in the speech, Tracy. We are just like Mussolini. We are out and out fascists. And, you know, as the son of a number of men who went overseas to stop global fascism, I take real umbrage at that. As the son of a woman who gave up the notion of going to college so that she could enter a munitions plant literally and make shells for the guns that were being fired to stop fascism. You're daggum right. I take extreme offense at that.
It's so offensive to You know, because I just sit here and I listen to these fools and I'm going, really? So you guys, I'm a fascist because, hell, I want my tax dollars to do something other than, I don't know, go over to Iraq and kill a bunch of people. I want my tax dollars to do more than, I don't know, making sure that Paris Hilton and her ilk get better tax breaks. I want my tax dollars, maybe so I can go to school or my son can go to college without, you know, going into unbelievable debt. I want to know that if I get sick, how dare I not want, you know, how dare I want to know that if I go to the hospital, I'm not going to have to, you know, live on the street once I get out of the hospital because I'm going to either have to choose between, I don't know, eating, paying my rent, or paying my medical bills. Why do I have to live this way?
Why do you have to make those choices, but Rick Santorum doesn't?
Does not. I picked up a lady a couple of weeks ago. She's an American, but she moved to London. And she's like, as much as I miss my country, as much as I miss my family, you know, she comes as much as she can because her parents are older and, you know, probably not long for this earth. But she's like, I cannot come back to this country until we get this figured out with the healthcare situation. She's like, I miss America. I love my country, but I cannot live here. She's like, you know, when she talks to her friends that are from London or England or what have you, and she travels a lot now too, and she talks to her friends about our healthcare situation, they think that she's making it up. They cannot believe that we live in a country as rich as this country.
That speech.
And people are dying in the streets.
That speech, Tracy, should be played on every media outlet outside the United States. It should be played there. It should be played in civilized countries. The UK is trying to remain civilized. Not that, you know, the austerity and all of that stuff is chomping hard at it. But it should be played in the UK. It should be played in all the European nations where people are able to go to the doctor when they're sick. It should be played everywhere that health care and social safety nets are taken as essential elements of any form of social contract between people and their government.
I mean, when he was saying, I have to laugh, when he was saying about how American gov companies have left this country because of the cost of doing business. Is the government's fault? Well, yes, it is in part because, like you said, of NAFTA and all the RAFTA and the GRAFTA and the bullshitta that, you know, came in the 90s, that it was allowing these companies to go, you know, and outside our, you know, our jobs without fear of reprisal. So, yeah, the government does have had a hand in it, but the bottom line is it's just plain old good old American greed. Because they know that they can go to these countries like, I don't know, China, and not pay these people anything and work them to death like they're trying to do to this country, and they better like it. And you better not complain, because you're lucky to have a job as it is.
Keep your head down.
And tote that barge, lift that sail.
See, you know? And you'll notice that when Rick Santorum referenced his grandfather being paid in company scrip, coupons he called them.
Yeah, he didn't
manifest any disapproval of that.
What?
It was a horrible system. It was a terrible system. You were paid in scrip. You could shop only at the company store, and all of the prices at the company store were inflated so as to keep you perpetually poor.
Now, what's that? I owe my soul to the company store.
Yeah, 16 tons.
Yeah, and it's like
Tennessee Ernie Ford.
Well, why do I see those little bits of, you know, useless information that have been stored in my head for the last 4 to 5 years? But the bottom, like you said, they kept these people in abject poverty. This is poor. You know, because, like you said, the price, you know, $20 for a loaf of bread. And I don't even think I'm being outrageous by saying that.
Oh, it was crazy.
And you think, and you know, and like you were saying about his grandfather, you know, he was saying how he, my grandfather worked until he was 72 years old. Bullshit. Because, like you say, so what year did his grandfather die that he did not pay into Social Security?
It's impossible.
It's impossible. It's impossible.
And it also means he had it when he died.
Exactly. And that's what, you know, see, this is what tickles me about these people. Well, actually, it tickles me about these people and pisses me off about the media, because it's like, we have the internet now. We don't have to go into dusty, moldy, you know, library rolls and microfiche and all that, because even if we don't have the exact data on whether or not he collected Social Security or whatnot and have you by name, you can just look up for the year he died and how long he was in this country and know whether or not he paid into the system.
Yeah, exactly. And let me ask you this. You're in Southern California. You're in L.A.
Yeah. It's actually, and by the way, it's 87 degrees today, so go ahead.
Yeah, well, thanks a million. Thanks for thanks for the sour persimmons, sister.
I had to say it. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, and no, everybody's trying to get me out of here. You know, hey, it was 90 degrees today.
90 degrees, Bob.
But let me ask you, if his campaign lasts long enough that he comes and brings that hyper-pious horse shit to California, is anybody going to be buying?
In Orange County, yes. Yes. Oh, yeah. I mean, California is not as liberal as people. I mean, I don't know if they're crazy enough. I mean, because he could heal, you know, there's a few people. I mean, we do have Mel Gibson out here, remember? You know, he's a...
Oh, and he'd be welcome at that church that Mel built there in Malibu, because they got him. They make sure they do all their masses in Latin.
Right. And to me, and like you, and you know, like, I don't know, if I was a Catholic, I would be offended. Because, see, when was the last time they actually taught Latin in public school? In the 50s?
Oh, no. I had 4 years of it in high school, and I graduated in 1981 in a high school in Alabama.
In California, it was not so much. Excuse me.
Bless you.
Excuse me, part of the curriculum. But the thing is, it's a dead language. Okay, like, you know, I think you said earlier that Texas Betsy said she doesn't go to synagogue unless it's, you know, in Hebrew. But again, Hebrew,
that's a living language.
It ain't dead. There's a whole lot of people still speaking it.
Right.
Hell, I know some Hebrew. Well, mostly Yiddish.
Yeah, well, right. I know that Rick Santorum is Meshuggah.
Exactly. Well, actually... Never mind.
Or Meshuggah. Maybe I've got the ending wrong. But I'm trying.
Meshuggah.
Yeah, Marty writing in, he's also in California. He says, Orange County? Yes. The Central Valley, Fresno County? Also. Also, remind Tracy that we did elect Arnold twice to be Herr Gruppenführer.
But the thing is, Arnold was not that shit crazy.
No, he almost came across sane once in a while. Yeah, we've been corrected. Meshuggah is Yiddish. Ah,
it's Yiddish.
But I know there's some direct transfers into English that we use. I just haven't been reminded yet. But Texas Betsy will.
Yeah, Texas Betsy will. But the thing is, to me, I sit here and often wonder, because I tend not to live in fear, because, you know, like I am a Christian, and then I believe in the Lord, and I have absolute faith. But like I said, I don't think the Lord likes me any better than anybody else. Like I said, he has no respect of person. You know, everybody has, God is the one, you know, the grand equalizer, I guess I could say. Everybody, he sees everybody in the same light. So when people like, what is that fool that plays for the Denver Broncos?
Yeah, Timmy Tebow.
He's another one. It's like basically he's saying God, like, well, the same thing as when people go, when back in the day or now, when people would go into battle and they would pray to God, and if they won, it was like, obviously God loves me better than he loves you.
Yeah.
Well, he don't love you, because if he loved you, you wouldn't be, you would have won.
Right. Because, well, notice the beginning of that speech, you know. He tells, you know, you here in Iowa, in this, you bore the burden, as if they were carrying some sort of cross to Golgotha.
Oh, my God. One of my favorite movies in the world that I watch Christmas time, The Ref.
You know, oh, that's so funny, because that is my wife's favorite Christmas movie.
And that scene with Kevin Spacey, when he tells, you know... Basically, you know, the next time you feel not appreciated, go and nail yourself on the cross, you know, because it's like, that is like my favorite movie. I watched it, you know, the day before Christmas. Actually, I watched that one and Christmas Vacation and A Christmas Story, you know, my three most favorite Christmas movies. And of course, Charlie Brown's Christmas, you know.
Well, Linus's recitation of the Christmas Story from Luke remains, it's the definitive version in my book. It just is. You know, the one that starts with "Lights, please."
Lights, please. Ah.
Oh, I can't hear that without bawling.
I'm sitting in my living room bawling. And see, like when I was a kid, when, you know, because I think that special started in '64, so I wasn't born yet. But of course, by the time I was 4 or 5, it played every year. And it wasn't until, you know, I became an adult that I really understood. I mean, of course, I kind of understood it, and I understood the, you know, the importance of it when I was a kid, because I was raised in the Baptist church, and, you know, that's what we do.
We certainly do.
But to hear it now as an adult and to really understand the true meaning of those verses, and then you think about people like Rick Santorum and Michelle Batshit Crazy Bachman and all these people claiming to be Christians.
Oh, Rick Perry saying, you know, I'm a Christian, but you don't have to be in the pew every Sunday to know that there's something wrong when the queer people can serve openly in the military, but a child can't pray in school.
And
really, Tracy, it just grabs me by the brains and swings me around the room to think that there are literally millions of people who are actually voting American citizens who say, that's right, Brother Rick. Them poor cheerings, they can't pray in school. They don't need no school lunches, because that's government dependency, but, oh, they can't pray in school. They could pray for some food, maybe, but them godless, communist, socialist, fascist liberals won't let them pray for food in the schools. Oh, Jesus, how are we ever going to get back to God?
And then, again, you can pray anywhere you want to pray.
Yes.
I can pray in school. I've prayed in school, especially when I was back in school and prayed about that exam I hadn't studied.
Absolutely. Now, I do ascribe to that one little aphorism, don't pray in our schools and we won't think in your churches.
Right. It's like, I pray, okay? And I can honestly attest that I have had prayers answered. I have been delivered from horrible circumstances and situations because of my faith, and I have prayed. But again, I did not fall down on my knees in public and did this big, you know, hullabaloo. It was a conversation between me and my God.
Right. There's nothing in there that... Well, in fact, as Tim from L.A., one of our buddies, you know Tim, he sent me along Matthew chapter 6, verse 5, and when thou prayest, thou shalt not be as the hypocrites are, for they love to pray standing in the synagogues and in the corners of the streets, that they may be seen of men. Verily I say unto you, they have their reward. And right, there's nothing in the book about...
Excuse me.
I don't know, an end zone dance after the prayer. Or you don't come out of the closet and says, I just had the greatest conversation. You know, God is not Oprah.
No, he's not. And, you know, like I said, I have a person. I get into it with people, and and it's true. You should not talk about religion to everybody.
No, we just do that here. Just amongst friends.
Because amongst friends who, you know, even though we have some friends that are atheists in here and some people who are, you know, don't believe in God.
But, you know, right, and people who aren't sure and free thinkers. We've got Baptists, we've got Catholics, we've got Episcopals. We got everybody in the Horn family. But here is the common thread that runs through all of them, Tracy. We may not share a faith. We may not even share the ability to believe, but we do share tolerance in mighty abundance.
And that's tolerance.
But my tolerance ends the minute that you, and I don't mean you, of course, my tolerance ends the minute that you tell me I gotta be like you are, I gotta believe like you believe, or else I'm going to be personally responsible for America not getting back to Jeebus.
And that is one of the things that makes me nuts about these evangelicals and their ilk.
Yeah, evil-jellicals. Evil-jellicals.
Evil-jellicals. Because they have no tolerance for any other, if you're Muslim, you're godless. If you're Catholic, you're godless. If you are... What is it? Mormon, you're godless.
And weird.
And weird. Well, the underwear thing is kind of...
Oh, the private planet thing just knocks me down.
You know, but still, it is not for me to judge anybody's religion. It is not for me to judge anybody's faith. It is not for me to judge you if you do not believe in God. Because guess what? The last time I checked, we lived in the United States of America, and as quiet as it's kept, we are supposed to have the ability of freedom of religion.
And freedom of conscience goes with it. But you'll notice that freedom of conscience is not in the First Amendment. Neither the religious right will forever tell you, well, separation of church and state ain't really in the First Amendment. That's just something Thomas Jefferson said. It ain't really there. But they will rely on freedom of conscience to allow a pharmacist to refuse to fill a prescription for the morning after pill on grounds of conscience, and that's not in the First Amendment either, but by golly, they read that right in. I acknowledge everyone's right to believe as they wish or not believe, but the problem is not with me or us, Tracy. The problem is with the other side that will not acknowledge that one need not believe in order to be a good American, let alone a good human.
And see, that's my hope. I was watching, I've been watching a lot of movies lately because I've been like on lockdown in my house. I've been having problems with my fibromyalgia, so I just haven't really been working much. So I watched two movies the other day, The Ides of March and The Help. So have you seen The Ides of March?
I have not.
Okay, that's, you know, the George Clooney movie about the presidential primary and blah, 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 blah.
I think I need to see that.
You need to see that.
I don't know if I've got the stomach for The Help, though.
You don't. But you know what, though?
Okay, thank you. In other words, what you're telling us, Tracy, is in sitting down and watching The Help, you took one for the team.
I took one for the team. Now, in my defense, I love me some Viola Davis, okay? I love her with the Heat of a Thousand Suns. She is an amazing actress. I just wish she would start playing more people, more happy black women, because usually she's the almost like the Cicely Tyson of this millennium.
Well, you know what? I've not heard that said before, but I think yeah, you nailed that one.
Yeah,
just getting all them pissed off roles.
Right, she was so amazing in this movie. that it made it watchable. But I am so, because of course, you know, the white folks, because I hadn't seen it. And I actually refused to see it because all my white friends were just like, I should have somebody tell me that I reminded of Viola Davis because of my strength of character. And I had to let them know that as much as I admire Viola Davis because she is an amazing actress, when you tell a black woman that I remind you of a maid, not so much a compliment. And it's one of those things that, like, with the help liberal white people or people who don't think they're racist but really are, and they see the characters in this movie, and they're like, see, I'm not racist. I would never do anything like that.
Right. It was an excuse. The entire movie served as an excuse. Oh, see, we've moved on from all that now. Never mind. Let's not talk about that anymore.
Let's not talk about that. And I have to point, you know, I like, my friends call me the great white corrector. It's like, no, this, you know, there's certain scenes in that movie, and if anybody, because you mentioned something about eating, somebody wrote about eating shit with a cross-shaped spoon.
Yes.
If you see that movie, and there's a scene in that movie that kind of has that kind of same thing.
Ew.
Yeah. So, you have to watch the movie because, I mean, it's just, it's insulting in a way because it makes the civil rights movement in the South look like, oh, it's just, unhappy Negroes and, they, you know, and another great white war person that came in, because, you know, those movies drive me crazy. I still have yet to see The Blind Side. I just simply refuse to watch that movie because I'm so tired of these damn movies that white people come in and save the day. Not that there weren't white people during the civil rights movement who lost their lives and helped fight during that horrible time in our history, but they did not come in to save the day.
You're gonna love this, Tracy. This just came in from Isaac. He says, religion is like a penis. It's fine to have one. It's fine to be proud of it. But please, don't whip it out in public and start waving it around. And please don't try to shove it down my children's throats. Toaster!
Oh, God.
Wouldn't you love to say that face-to-face to somebody like Rick Santorum?
Yeah, actually,
because after all, he does belong to a faith that has a real problem with its priests doing exactly that to little children.
We just had another priest arrested. Well, he was not arrested.
Of course not.
He just resigned because there was no child molestation. He fathered two children in another state.
Jesus
Christ. It was not, but the thing is the hypocrisy of this whole, it's like, dude, I mean, this is like, why, you know, they keep saying how priests should not marry, and it's like, look.
No, they should just father the children out of wedlock and walk.
Children in other states, and they should just.
Yeah, it's all just the thorn birds.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's the thorn. Oh, I forgot about the thorn birds.
See, I told you. Hey, Tracy, I got a few stacked up, but it's been great hearing from you, and I don't be such a daggum stranger, okay?
Okay, God bless you and keep you. Yeah, I said it.
And you know what? I'll take it because it was offered in the true spirit. You know, because I'll take that. You know, I'll take offeratory altar fires lit by Zoroastrians. Ain't no skin off my butt, you know.
Well, like I said, Bob, I love you. I miss you. I'm glad I got through. And just keep on pushing, my brother. Keep on pushing.
I will. You want to stay on hold, or you want to? You listening elsewise?
No, because I'm trying to figure out how to do it on the radio on my computer. So, but keep me on hold because I'll you know, at least I can listen to the rest of the show.
All right, back to hold you go. Thank you, Tracy.
Thank you.
Bye now.
Bye.
Tracy calling from sunny 87 degree L.A. Onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Flogging Fetuses is a great name for an indie punk band.
You're damn right it is, David.
I mean, my God.
I mean, they thought Flogging Molly was good.
And if you really want to piss off people, make it a lesbian punk band.
Okay, but Flogging Molly is out there. What do you say we go with Press Gang Fetus?
Okay. That might work on that. But
the same thing occurred to me. We, you know, after all these years, we have established that sort of whole wavelength thing. And Flogging Fetus, wow. I'll write that down so for when Ferg starts his band.
I think Santorum, and this is why a lot of Democrats need to pay attention to this. I think Santorum is a trial and error type of balloon, the same way that Ron Paul is. And for people who didn't catch this, Ron Paul was, I believe, on CNN last night, and they asked him...
Hey, Ron Paul was on CNN?
do you think he'll win the presidency? And he said, not likely. And then what happens? I look on Politico, and what is the title? Ron Paul's closing argument is son's opening. It's what I was trying to tell you, Bob, about the whole campaign.
Yeah, there ain't going to be no third-party candidacy for Ron Paul because this is all the setup for Rand Paul, a libertarian ophthalmologist.
Yeah, and there's this line in the article. That's only increased the sense that Rand's the likely heir to his father's movement and a natural to carry the torch into the 2016 presidential race.
And see, the same thing obtains for Santorum as well. Because Mitt gets this shot, and if he doesn't win, he's done. You don't get three bites of the apple. However, for Santorum and for Huntsman, even, 16 remains a viable option, as it does for Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist.
I think the Republicans are scared to get Santorum on the... On the whole mainstream page, get more and more people talking about him, and that's why they're going to go running back to Romney. And then this plays back into the whole, well, do the Republicans really want it in 2012 if Rand Paul's going to run in 2016 with Chris Christie?
And,
you know, the whole.
And again, I still find the whole Huntsman thing really fascinating because were it not for Huntsman, who never campaigned in Iowa, not one blessed day, David.
Yeah.
The margin of victory for Romney would have been nearly 1,000 votes. And if that is the case, then the story is Santorum comes in close second, but Romney clear winner. Because as it stands, the present the headline is Romney wins Iowa with less votes than he got in 2008.
Did you see that the private organization for 41% they voted under Americans Elect? That's not being reported either.
Oh, really?
And that's the moment where you circle that right there, because it makes you wonder who if the Americans Elect campaign gets as far as they can, who are they going to put in that spot for that presidential candidate that could spoil votes for Obama.
Indeed.
It all depends on that.
No, this is there's a hell of a lot of chess being played out right now.
Well, you know, there's so much things happening. You know, for example, I brought this up before, and a lot of people still laugh this off, and I said this. And if I'm right on this, I get the Joseph and the Technicolor dream, psychic dream coat, you know? The court, Obama must be constitutionally eligible. For the first time in dozens of court cases challenging Barack Obama's eligibility to be president, a judge has ruled that Obama must, in order to be a candidate on the Georgia ballot for president in 2012, meet the constitutional demands for candidates for the office. See, this is what we talked about before, Bob. They were going to continue pushing all of these courts until they got one of these verdicts, and hopefully they could get a spoiler state. I'm still sticking with that, ladies and gentlemen. I'm still sticking with they are going to try to get as much as they can that Southern spoiler state.
Yeah.
And knock him off the ballot.
And but if they do, David, that's won't we just say, forget it, Jake, it's Alabama Stan?
Yeah, we will, because we give up so easy on the
Well, no, I don't mean it as a matter of giving up, but is there anybody out there that thinks Obama has a chance in Alabama or Mississippi or any of those old any of the new Confederacy? I mean, he does not have a snowball's chance in hell here in West Virginia, and he knows it, which is one of the reasons I'm absolutely baffled that he hasn't gone ahead and said, yes, you know, screw mountaintop removal.
Well, you have to wonder how it's going to play into the right wing is already, as you know, because of the news with Cordray, and they're already putting up the storm that Obama's seizing power, and this is unconstitutional.
Right, but it certainly wasn't unconstitutional when Dim Leader was doing it.
No, of course not. When President Bush and Dark Cheney were doing that. No, it was not.
That was good government standing up to those socialist bedwetting terrorist mollycoddling liberals.
But here's the question, Bob. How hard do the... And this is the problem, and this is what you need to think about, and this is what a lot of people are thinking about at the same time. How hard do you want, when the door is open, how hard do you want Obama to push, knowing that we have such a concentrated media, and they will jump on this and bring it down in flames until they get their goals accomplished? How hard do you want Obama to push on this? That's the question that we all should just ponder a minute and say.
Not at all a bad observation, David. No, not at all. By the way, thanks for the reminder from Margo last night about the DVD of Cave of Forgotten Dreams. She was really tickled when she heard.
Well, that's good. That's good. Not a problem on that. But yeah, I think the whole thing, what we need to consider regarding this whole election, regarding the future of the Democratic Party, as long as we have this concentrated media, and when you fight for issues, you have to know that point where you've touched a nerve, and you need to realize, like, okay, what do we do here? How do we dampen the flames down, or something like that? And that's where Obama has to be careful. Not to mention the fact that
it goes without saying that the right wing, being the right wing, otherwise known as the Republican Party, they're going to go out of their tiny little lizard brains anyway. There's nothing Obama can do or say that is the right thing for them to do or say. At this point in time, since we've had several movie references over the last couple of nights, David, at this point in time, the Republican Party is the alien behind the glass wall in Independence Day. You know the scene I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Okay, and what's his name? Bill who's his face? As the President of the United States goes up to the glass and says, "What do you want from us?" And the alien says, "Die." Well, that's the Republican Party. That's their response. Yeah. Look, and I'm not making this up. This is not hyperbole, for God's sakes. They're out there praying their imprecatory prayers that God, you know, their God, the one that hates all the same things they hate, that their God will literally strike down Barack Obama and put another in his place. They're not kidding. I'm not kidding. It's out there. Look up imprecatory prayer Obama, and you can find the fundamentalists out there encouraging their mouth-breathing faithful to pray for the death of Barack Obama. They really are. They're the hateful otherworldly aliens just sitting there behind the glass going, "Die."
I'm almost positive that that's what they're doing, because of the fact is that we seem to have this problem where we can't address what the Republicans are actually doing.
No, and it's because we're behind the eight ball. We don't have the microphone. We don't have the money. We don't have the for-profit 1% media presence. You know, just because I couldn't stand Radio Rwanda or CNN or anything, I watched the wrap-up last night on MSNBC, and that was almost regurgitory. I mean, hearing Ed Schultz overscream Lawrence O'Donnell, who has more brains in his toenail clippings than Ed has ever been near in his entire life? Please.
I mean,
Ed was screeching so hard that he made Tweety Matthews, who was also on the panel, sound rational. So, you know, there you go.
Yeah, it's troubling to see how this election is going to play out in terms of how the narrative is set, because it looks like Obama is going to get some more things done for this year. But when we're talking about appointees and subjects of that nature, I don't know. It seems like we have to have that discussion, okay, how hard do you want to push this year, and what are you willing to put on the table, knowing that we have this immersed media that is going to jump on so many different things, and they're just looking for that one powder keg.
Yeah, they are. And hence, it's going to be a mighty damned interesting next 11 months. You know, we're less than 11 months away, right? Or almost. Aren't we 11 months away at this point?
I think so, yeah. We're about 11 months in. And this is going to be an interesting, a really tiresome debate on issues that we shouldn't be debating, because we've already debated them to no end.
And I see no debate in this, but I do see a value in pointing out at length and in depth just how hateful, just how revolting, just how disgusting, and most of all, just how incredibly dangerous these people are. This is see, I don't give a damn about horse race politics like what you hear in the for-profit 1% media, David. I really, really don't. I don't care about who's ahead by what percentage points and who's, you know, coming up hard from behind, Santorum. But I do care about the things that they openly tell America that they want to do, not for, not with, but to America, David, and to at least point it out so that maybe it can get out there and we can have the discussion here, and we can expand our little voices wherever we may possibly do so.
I'm in agreement with you on everything regarding that. I think that, like I said, the discussion, the fact that so many people are so missing, this is another topic that's really, I think a lot of progressives are really in the dark in some ways about the whole how many misinformed voters are just being created right
now. But that's the nice thing. Not here. Not us.
Yeah.
Jude just sent me a note along saying that, referring to the pastor who spoke to his flock about Santorum for president, she noted that Ed Schultz gave the pastor on-air time. Now, this clown comes from Peacemakers Institute.
Well,
now why? Is it for the zoo value that you bring this guy on and give him time on an ostensibly progressive program? Because I don't know. I don't get it. Can't we just? I don't know. Maybe there's value in letting progressive America really honest and for true hear how effing weird they are, instead of just telling them. Maybe that's why.
Well, I did want to mention this last story, because I know you didn't cover it, and I just wanted to get your take on it. What did you think of the whole CeeLo New Year's Eve controversy?
You know what? I think he got what was coming. You don't write John Lennon's atheism out of Imagine.
Yeah, that's
it's good. Not and no religions too. I mean, and no religions too is in the song. It's not and all religions true. It just ain't.
That's funny because, you know, in so many ways, I think CeeLo's a Christian or something. I mean, they would...
Well, yeah, he was trying to write... He was trying to truck some religion on John Lennon's back. John Lennon's gunned down, assassinated, dead back.
And that just reminds me of the fact of what I was telling you about that Take Six song where they changed Donald Fagen's Beautiful World into creationism.
You're practically throwing the tequila bottles at me right now,
David. Before I go, I wanted to tell Kate that reverend that you were hearing, that minister. I'm not sure what his rank is, but that's Reverend. I wear my sunglasses at night. That's not me.
David, thanks a bunch.
All right, Bob.
Have a good night. Bye. We've got about 30 minutes left in the program, and that's 30 minutes of good conversation, I'm hoping. Come on. I have some patience here. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello.
Robin.
Oh, sorry. He's not available just now. Calling for the boy. That's his name, Ferg. Let's see here. Now, going back, I said that there was a wrinkle to the whole Latin thing. You may have noticed, or maybe not, that there is some serious crazy afoot in the state of New Hampshire. Yeah, they've introduced birther bills and whatnot. And it's all... Yuck. Well, wait, before I go there, let me back up. Our buddy Mark in Florida noting RFK, MLK, JFK, maybe Wellstone and Carnahan all killed by the right wing. Well, I remember when the college Republicans boasted of Wellstone, we had to kill him, but we got him out of office. Remember that? I do. And then David in Tennessee also noting, with regard to the whole Santorum victory thing, look, folks, the evangelical vote was badly split till like 5 days ago. Some evil rev named Vandershitten or whatever, something like that. Anyway, 5 days ago, he told the faithful, I anoint Rick. Get in line. They got in line behind Rick Santorum, and he doesn't give the marching order. They'd have been scattered like a covey of quail when I tripped on a root and my shotgun went off. And that's the truth. And, of course, the reason the Vandershitten, or whatever his name was, the reason he endorsed Santorum was because Santorum paid him to do it. He had shaken down every other candidate who wasn't willing to pony up the $1 million plus. But Santorum, you know, who's operating his campaign on a shoestring, it's an insult to shoestrings how poor Santorum's campaign is. It wasn't so poor it couldn't pay for the endorsement of the Reverend Vandershitz. Yep, you know. So anyway... Getting back to the weirdness of New Hampshire, this is just astonishing. Breathtaking, really. The New Hampshire legislature and a Republican member thereof has now, in an effort to drag that state backward, introduced a bill, no kidding, that says all members of the general court proposing bills and resolutions addressing individual rights or liberties shall include a direct quote from the Magna Carta, which sets forth the article from which the individual right or liberty is derived. That's the entire bill. Now, the Magna Carta was crafted and signed on that field, one of my favorite place names on earth, Runnymede. Well, the mead seems rather runny today. I don't care how effing runny it is. Bring on the runny mead. There has to be a citation to the Magna Carta. Well, I thought it might be kind of fun to check out some citations to the Magna Carta. It might come as a real surprise. You know, Tracy noted there hasn't been a whole lot of Latin teaching in this here country in a while. And I'm guessing they're not teaching a hell of a lot of it in New Hampshire. So I thought we might read the Magna Carta, because citing to it is going to be a real booger for them in New Hampshire. Hell, it's hard enough to read, and I'm a professional reader of stuff. Johannes del Gracia Rex Anglia, Dominus Hiberniae, Dux Normanniae, Aquitaniae, et Comis Andigawi, Archeo Episcopis, Abatibus Comitibus, Baronibus Justiciaries Forestariis, Vice Comitibus Prepositis Ministris et Omnibus Baluis et Fidelibus Suis Salutem. That's, hi, King John! Really. With a lot of foofraw. Scatus nos initiu Dei et pro salute anime nostre et omnium antecessorum et heredum nostrorum ad honorem Dei et exaltic, see, it's been a while since I did this, exaltationem sancte ecclesiae, holy church, et emendationem regni nostri per concilium venerabilum patrum nostrorum, and by prayer, counsel with our venerable father, Stephani Cantuariensis Archeo Episcopii Tokius Angliae Primatis et Sancte Romana Ecclesiae. Yeah, you gotta cite this if you want to pass a law about individual liberties in where? Yeah, New Hampshire. You gotta wonder how they're gonna deal with this one. Because there's all kinds of fun little laws in the Magna Carta. There's a law in the Magna Carta that says we will straightway return the son of Llewellyn and all the Welsh hostages. There's that one. And it's hilarious. One of the sponsors of the bill, this over at Think Progress, notes that he wasn't terribly familiar with the actual text. Mainly, I saw the measure as an homage. the chairman of the New Hampshire Democratic Party, the spokesman for the New Hampshire Democratic Party, said, I appreciate all the hard work the Republican legislators are putting into the effort to make them look like extremists. Saves us the trouble. I wonder how long it'll take for them to cite an individual liberty based on this little nugget. Et si quis moriatur, et debitum debea Judaeus, uxur eius habeat dotem suam, et nihil redat de debito illo, et si liberi ipsius defuncti qui fuerint infra etatem remanaserit, providiantur eis necessaria secundum tenementum, quod fuerit defuncti et de residuo solvatur debituum, solvo suercio dominorum. Simile modo fiat de debitis, quae debentur aliis quam Judaeus. That's a very important... The Magna Carta is one of the fundamental great documents of this here great country upon which we rest our rights which come from God. Especially that one. You know what that just said? If anyone who has borrowed a sum of money from Jews dies before the debt has been repaid, his heir shall pay no interest on the debt for so long as he remains under age.
This is what passes for deep thought among the weird, scurrysome little members of the right wing. Magna Carta, of course, being Latin for Great Charter. It was written in Latin in 1215 because nobody was really writing. Nobody was really writing English at the time. That would remain for Chaucer to come along, you know, with when not upperly with assure zoo to the druth of March, with Pearson to the root, and bob every vein and swish the cord which virtue engendered is the floor and zeke for seek with his sweetie breath, yada yada yada. That would have to, writing in English would have to wait for that. But they wrote it in Latin, which nobody in probably either the Republican or the Democratic Party of New Hampshire understands. If any of our earls or barons or others holding of us in chief by knight service dies, and at his death his heir be of full age and owe relief, he shall have his inheritance on payment of the old relief, namely the heir or heirs of an earl, £100 for a whole earl's barony. Cheap. The heir or heirs of a baron, £100 for a whole barony. The heir or heirs of a knight, 100 shillings at most for a whole knight's fee. And he who owes less shall give less according to the ancient usage of fiefs. Ha! There it is. The Republicans want to go back to feudalism. Fiefdoms, really. Hi, Surf, how are you? Hi, Surf Horn family. I'm Surf Bob. It goes on and on and on. If anyone dies indebted to the Jews, his wife shall have her dower and pay nothing of the debt. And the city of London shall have all its ancient liberties and free customs as well, by land as by water. Because you want to cite that if you're talking about the, oh, I don't know, the right to take more than one buck during deer season in New Hampshire. No sheriff or bailiff of ours or anyone else shall take the horses or carts of any free man for transport work save with the agreement of that freeman. Henceforth, all fish weirs shall be cleared completely from the Thames and the Medway and throughout all England except along the seacoast. Is that, by God? Well, there's your definitions of freedom. Me, I like it better this way.
This is not to say, of course, that the system was as sophisticated as it later came to be. I asked the professor of medieval studies at Cambridge why this was.
Well, it may not have been a statutory obligation, but, a guy who's a freeman was obliged in the medieval system to do boon work. That's right, yeah. There's an example from the village rolls in 1313.
And I believe you're going to do it for us now.
That's right, yeah. Oh, it shouldn't have the village rolls.
What else you can say to something like that except omnes autem istas consultu dines predictas et libertates quas nos concessimus in regno nostro tenendas quantum ad nos pertinet erga nostros omnes de regno nostro tam clerici quam laici
of Zerwent.